You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in again to the D-backs podcast. Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com D-backs reporter, Steve Gilbert. And we're going to talk about some different things. We're going to set the stage for opening day as if it was today, Steve. We'll put out your lineup, rotation, and bullpen with no more additions to this D-backs team, see how it stacks up. And we'll also hear from Taylor Clark, who was down at the Rookie Career Development Program outside of Washington, D.C. last weekend. And we'll hear from him and talk about his prospects here as far as how they relate to the D-backs in 2018. Let's start, though, with the lineup. Again, this is opening day 2018, if it was on, as we record this, January 11th. The lineup you've put together is David Peralta leading things off, then A.J. Pollock, Paul Goldschmidt, Jake Lamb, Brandon Drury at second base, Yasmani Tomas in right, Ketel Marte, the shortstop, and Jeff Mathis, the catcher. When you look at that lineup, you compare it to the lineup that the team had a year ago. Obviously, there's no J.D. Martinez in there that they finished the year with, but overall, it still stacks up pretty well, doesn't it? It's a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, you know, Tim, I think that one of the things that the Diamondbacks probably are not going to have a hard time doing this year scoring runs. They were up there in the league last year in scoring runs. I think that they returned just about everybody outside of Martinez. And, you know, it's always worth, I feel like I need to point out, because I know that some Diamondback fans get very concerned when they look at a lineup without J.D. Martinez. It's worth noting that they did compile quite a good record before J.D. Martinez joined the team last year. And, you know, when you got Paul Goldschmidt and healthy A.J. Pollock and Jake Lamb in that lineup, that's a pretty formidable lineup there. So I think that, you know, while certainly if it started today and they were without J.D. Martinez or any other additions, I think it's still a lineup that can mash. I think it's still a lineup that's got a lot of pop in it and a lineup that's going to score some runs to try to help support that pitching staff.
Now, that said, when you look at this lineup, if there was to be a change or a question right now, what would that be between now and opening day?
Yeah, I think they're still looking to add some depth to the outfield, to give Tomas a break, to give Peralta and Pollock a day off here and there. You know, so it wouldn't surprise me if they sign an outfielder for some depth. Before we get to spring training, it wouldn't surprise me if they add a little bit more depth to the catching position. I still think that, right now they've got Mathis, they've got Chris Herman and John Ryan Murphy, and I think that they would certainly like to get a little deeper there after losing Chris Iannetta. So those would kind of be two of the things. I think that Chris Owings is a guy you could see maybe fill a super utility role and kind of take some of those outfield at bats. I could see that happening, and also given the surplus they have in the infield, Brandon Drury certainly would be a trade chip the Diamondbacks could use if they wanted to acquire an outfielder, or if they wanted to kind of strengthen their system, just because they have so many quality and talented middle infielders. Drury becomes a little bit of expendable for them.
All right, let's move on to the rotation, and it shapes up very familiar for D-backs fans. Zach Greinke, Robbie Ray, Taijuan Walker, Patrick Corbin, and Zach Godley. A lot of guys there that had tremendous kind of breakout seasons in 2017 when you talk about Godley and Ray, and obviously Corbin was good again, and Walker a nice addition to the team, and Greinke at the top. Obviously, there's been trade rumors out there about possibly losing one of these guys, but if it comes to opening day and this is your rotation, I mean, the D-backs have to feel great about these guys going out there again.
I think they do, and it's the most set rotation I can remember in recent memory. I'm sure there's a year I'm forgetting here, but to have five guys going into camp where, you know going in, hey, these are the five guys, usually there's at least one open spot. But they feel really good about Greinke, Ray, Walker, Corbin, Godley, whatever order you want to put them in. I think one of the things that's very interesting to me is that how far Zach Godley's coming in a year here. Last spring, Torey Lovello said he was probably coming out of spring training, seventh, eighth starter in his mind. But Shelby Miller ended up requiring Tommy John surgery, and they had to get somebody up from the minor leagues, and Godley came up, and every time they gave him the ball, he just kept pitching well and pitching well. And suddenly he becomes one of their most reliable starters and is kind of written in pen for this season in the starting rotation, at least as things stand right now and they head into spring training.
You mentioned Shelby Miller and obviously the Tommy John surgery. What is the latest on him?
You know, I saw him the other day out at the D-backs complex playing catch. He is supposedly on schedule and on his recovery. Probably looking at more of a mid-season return for him, or at least around that time frame, depending on how the rest of his rehab goes. But they're certainly hoping to have him back on the mound before the end of this season in the big leagues.
Could certainly add depth to a rotation. Nobody ever gets through the season with five starters, and being able to add a guy like Shelby Miller, even though he's obviously famously struggled with the D-backs, he looked pretty good right before the injury, though.
Yes. You know, it seemed like last year, spring training, he came in and seemed like a different guy. He was throwing harder, seemed more relaxed. A little bit of the pressure had been taken off him, I think. You know, he felt quite a bit of pressure coming in 2016. Expectations were high for the team. They were expecting him to be the number two starter behind Zach Greinke. Might have tried to put a little too much on his shoulders there. So it was just a disastrous year for him. But last year he was pitching well. And as you said, you know, then he got injured right after that, which was certainly disappointing for somebody who had worked so hard and kind of was seemed to find his groove. So he's somebody that they're anxious to get back, and again gives them a little bit of depth in the middle of the year. You know, you look at a guy like maybe an Anthony Bonda or Braden Shipley or Taylor Clark, who we're going to talk about later as guys who might be able to contribute at the big league level at some point this year if need be.
All right, and the bullpen, obviously some question whether or not maybe they add one more piece there. They've already added Brad Boxberger, but the way you have it lined up is Archie Bradley doing the closing and then Boxberger, the setup man, Yoshihisa Hirano, Andrew Chafin, Jimmy Scherfe, Randall Delgado, who they just signed a one-year deal to avoid arbitration with this week, and then finally TJ McFarlane. If there are no other moves made, how confident is the team that this bullpen will get them through 2018, or would there be a thought to add a piece down the road in the season?
Yeah, this is always, the bullpen's always the hardest part for me to predict on a team, especially before camp even opens. You know, there's so many guys that can jump up over the course of a spring that you're not expecting. I mean, look, last year we were talking about Archie Bradley as a starter candidate. No one even considered him as a bullpen piece until towards the end of spring training when he lost out on the starter's job and he became all of a sudden one of the best relievers out of the bullpen. So that was kind of my picks for right now. And so I'm not sure what direction they're going to go with closer. They have, you know, either Hirano, Boxberger, or Bradley that they could use in that role. I had to pick one, so I picked Bradley for now. I think they're going to look during spring training and make sure that they come out of camp with one guy, at least initially getting most of the save opportunities. So which one of those three, I don't know. I would kind of lean towards Bradley, but, you know, I guess we'll see what Hirano looks like. And Boxberger, somebody of the three that is the only one that has major league closing experience. And if he can stay healthy, he's somebody that they might look to and then use Bradley in more of a seventh and eighth inning type role, kind of like the Indians use Andrew Miller. So that could be kind of how they set up that bullpen.
Yeah, certainly interesting, and the bullpen always lends itself to the most, I think, stories and most things to watch in spring training, really for every team, because there's so many questions and so much changes from year to year. All right, I mentioned the Rookie Career Development Program. Taylor Clark was there, one of the representatives of the D-backs organization. The program covers everything about baseball in the major leagues except for actually the playing of the games, where they talk about it's basically a weekend outside of Washington, D.C., where the players will get to take part in skits and go to conferences and talk to members of the media. They learn how they should act on social media, how they should deal with the media, how they should act in a clubhouse in the major leagues, all that kind of stuff. And it's really helpful for a lot of the players. Taylor Clark was down there, and our Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo were down there as well doing interviews. They caught up with Taylor. Let's hear from him.
Taylor, by most accounts, you had a really solid 2017 season. Obviously, moving up to Reno was probably tough. When you look back at your year as a whole, how do you think everything went for you this past season?
I was pretty pleased with it. Just looking back at everything, being a Double-A All-Star, kind of going back, repeating Double-A, just to be able to prove it a little bit better. So that was reassuring, knowing what to expect going into the season. So I think that I just had more confidence a little bit going back to Double A. And after being an all-star, kind of just keeping the momentum carrying right into Triple A. Obviously, going from the Southern League to PCL, it's a little bit night and day. So, but I mean, you learned some good value or some good lessons pitching out in PCL. You just got to really minimize your mistakes and just try to make quality pitches.
I would imagine, I mean, if you get to the big leagues or wherever, different ballparks, different environments, you know, it teaches you that, like, you stick with your game plan, right? What works here should work there as long as you execute.
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, you don't want to shy away from your strengths, try to become someone that you're not. I consider myself maybe a little bit more of a fly ball pitcher, trying to pitch up in the zone, which kind of doesn't work to my advantage in Reno and out there. So, but it's one of those things that you make a mistake, you live, move on, learn from it. But got a lot of the guys on that team too that were up and down, and they would always try to take their advice, and they say it's a lot easier pitching up in the big leagues than pitching the PCL.
Yeah, especially Reno, I would imagine. Yeah. When you pick the brains of guys like that and you see them going up and down, it must seem like, all right, I'm getting close to my ultimate goal. What do you think you need to do with your own game to make that final jump up to Arizona for the first time?
I don't think there's anything I need to do differently. It's just more stay consistent, just be the same guy that I've been for the past 2 or 3 years or so. Not try to kind of get out to what I'm try not to become someone that I'm not. Just kind of just go out there, pitch my game, control what I can control, just kind of hope it works out.
You've always sort of been the kind of guy who's been more sort of feel for pitching than pure stuff, right? So I guess you get into trouble when you start trying to blow people away and things like that.
Exactly, yeah. When I try to get, like, if you get too caught up in, like, trying to strike everyone out or trying to do this, it's just know what you do well, try to stick to that, and then kind of tinker it.
Okay, a couple sort of fun questions for you. What's your go-to uniform number? Like, if you can pick a uniform number, what's your number you love and why?
32 usually, and no particular reason. It's just in college, when they're handing out jerseys, that's the one that fit, and I had really good success in college, so I was like, all right, I'll just continue that into pro season. So every minor league level is different, and, like, some don't even have 32, so, but I'll try to get that. It's something in the 30s.
All right, last one for you. What's your favorite, like, as a growing up, a major league baseball memory, going to a game, watching a game, something that really stands out that you remember from your childhood?
I always grew up a Mets fan, so both my parents, born and raised in New York, they passed it down to me. So one thing that actually really stands out to me is I remember watching their first home game after 9/11 against the Braves, where Piazza hits that home run. And they always see the highlights. I always get chills from it that day. But I remember watching that whole game, and my parents kind of sitting there watching me, explaining, like, what meant, because I was only like 8 at that time, but it's just like you could tell there was something that meant a lot more. It kind of just stuck with me.
So Taylor covering some different topics there, repeating Double A where he became an all-star, making it up to Triple A, and the challenges, Steve, of pitching in the Pacific Coast League, which is kind of famously a hitter's playground. With all the warm weather climates down there in Las Vegas and all those teams. It's a tough place to pitch, but a lot of players have to get their way through it. So when you look at Taylor Clark coming off a good season in 2017, you know, what's the time frame for him making it up to the big leagues?
Well, he's somebody that the Diamondbacks really like. They like his demeanor, the kind of the way he carries himself and his competitiveness. And while sometimes, as you pointed out, the Pacific Coast League is not a friendly place, particularly places like Reno, Colorado Springs, not, you know, conducive to guys putting up big pitching numbers, the teams are used to that. They factor that in, and they're just looking more at guys like, you know, how are they developing? How do their pitches themselves look? They understand that there are going to be balls that should be fly balls that go out of the ballpark and whatnot. So I think for a guy like Taylor Clark, probably more of a second half of the season would they look for him if he's having a good year. He's going to come to spring training, his first spring training camp this year. So that, I think, will be a great experience for him to get a chance to be around, you know, some of the veterans like a Zach Greinke or Robbie Ray and kind of see how the big leaguers go about them, you know, their business. So I think that's valuable for him. And again, I think it certainly will test him mentally this year to kind of see how he handles that Pacific Coast League, where the numbers just are always a little skewed in favor of the hitters.
Yeah, and even if they're not looking at those numbers, you know it has to take a toll mentally for these pitchers. Even though they can convince themselves that, hey, that would have been a fly ball in a normal park, when it leaves the ballpark and you see the guy jogging around the base, it has to have an impact. So I think it toughens guys up as well to have to deal with that, and we'll see how Taylor Clark deals with again here at the beginning of 2018. That'll do it for MLB.com Extras, our D-backs edition. For Steve Gilbert, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Chris Haft, our MLB.com Giants reporter, as the hot stove season continues to move slowly and coolly so far, but there's still work to be done. On this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about the Giants, where they stand right now. If the season was to start tomorrow, what would the lineup, rotation, bullpen look like? We'll get into that with Chris. We'll also talk a little bit about Tyler Beede, obviously a Giants prospect. He was down at the Rookie Career Development Program last weekend. We'll check in with him as our guys get a chance to interview him down there. And then we'll also talk about what 2018 looks like for Tyler Beede. But let's start with the roster breakdown as of right now, Chris. And when you look at the lineup, not exactly pretty. Obviously, there's work to be done. So if they were to roll this lineup out, it wouldn't be the best scenario, but I'm going to go through it anyway. This is the way you break it down. Gorkys Hernandez leading things off in center. Joe Panik batting second at second base. Buster Posey third. Evan Longoria, the new addition, batting cleanup. Then Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, Hunter Pence in right field. Austin Slater in left field. So with that lineup in mind, what's the strength there if they had to go with that lineup right now? You're laughing at me.
I'm sorry. The strength is hope. well, you know, you hope that Brandon Belt is healthy, you know, coming off of a concussion. It's a serious thing. You've got to hope that he's maybe on 20 home run form, 20 home run a season form. If he is, and, you know, close to 300, if he is, that'll give the offense a big boost right there. And that Buster Posey and Evan Longoria in the middle of the order will complement each other. That could go a long way towards spelling some success. And that Brandon Crawford, you know, I find little flaws in my own lineup there. I don't know if Bruce Bochy have two left-hand batters, Crawford and Belt, hitting consecutively. But if they did, they just have to scratch out as much offense as possible. You know, I like Panik in the number two spot. I'm not so sure about Gorky's leading off in center, but that's where things stand right now.
And obviously the question is what will be added, and that is still the plan, right? I mean, when you're thinking about an outfield that includes Slater, Hernandez, and Pence, that is a huge hole that this team kind of needs to take care of between here and opening day.
Yeah, you like the skills of Slater, Hernandez, and Pence. But you like them, I think, coming off the bench. Slater possibly could be an everyday player or maybe like a platoon player on down the road. But right now, I think you would like to have a little more experience in there, a proven hitter.
Yeah, so let's hope that the Giants can take care of business. Of course, everybody is in a similar position around baseball right now of still needing to do things because the market has been so slow. All right, moving on to the rotation, which lines up a little better than the lineup as of right now. You have Madison Bumgarner, obviously the ace, healthy again. Johnny Cueto, then Jeff Samardzija. There's your big three. Then you have Chris Stratton and Tyler Beede, who we'll also talk about a little bit later as far as the Rookie Career Development Program. But whereas the lineup, there's obvious work to be done. When you look at this rotation, it seems like there's a much better chance that is actually the five players that are in the rotation.
Very well could be, Tim, and if it's not, Bruce Bochy will probably be smiling because he'll have some good guys in there anyway. If it's not Tyler Beede and Chris Stratton filling the fourth and fifth spots, not respectively, Chris Stratton probably would be number four and Beede number five. That means he's probably gotten a good spring from Ty Block, spent most of last year in the rotation, showed some promise here and there, and Andrew Suarez. Bruce Bochy really likes Andrew. Loves his stuff. Just needs some experience. Maybe he'll start in AAA, but begin the season in AAA, but may come on strong later and win a spot in midseason. Now, the first three guys, you know, they get just average seasons from Bumgarner and Cueto in the top two. You know, that's a big improvement right there for the Giants.
Yeah,
last year.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you think about the big three, obviously they didn't bring what you expect from them. Bumgarner, obviously the real weird injury off the field that he suffered and missed most of the season. And then Cueto just wasn't Cueto. How much confidence is there that he can get back to being the pitcher that he was earlier in his career?
A lot. He showed flashes last year. He just didn't, in his case, he needed to start the year off right away. I mean, when a pitcher starts the year off with a blister, you're almost always playing catch-up. And that's what he had to do. That's what he had to do last year, and the results were an 8-8 record. So, if he's able to start out healthy, that's going to be a key. But if he can start out healthy, he's a guy who works. He's a little thick around the middle, but don't let that fool you. He's a guy who works very hard between starts, works very hard to prepare himself. So if he starts out the spring right, I think he's going to be fine the whole year.
All right, so the Giants known for the pitching, and the pitching should be good if things come together in 2018. Let's look ahead, though, to the bullpen. And Mark Melancon was obviously the big free agent signing a year ago to come in and be the closer. He, for parts of the season, was a disappointment as far as that role goes, but he is back. And then you have Sam Dyson as well, who has closer experience. Hunter Strickland, obviously, with the big fastball. Then there's Corey Guerin, Derek Law, Ty Block, who you mentioned being a possibility, is battling it out for one of those last spots in the rotation. Steven Okert, Kyle Crick, Josh Osich, and Moronato Reyes. There's a lot of arms down there, and when you look at the first three or four, it shapes up, it looks like on paper, to be a pretty solid bullpen.
A lot of arms, as you said, Tim, a lot of good arms. Maybe not a lot of experience, not a lot of savvy, and that's what some guys are going to have to pick up really quickly for this to be a good bullpen throughout the season. But there is some talent, and at least that's a good starting point for the Giants.
Mentioned Melancon and Dyson. Is Melancon the clear-cut guy to be the closer on opening day, or could Dyson push him in spring training?
I'd say Melancon is, all things considered, equal. But if Melancon slips or if he has another physical setback, Dyson will be ready to jump in. He's quite the competitor. That's one thing that was impressive about him last year.
So what's the question mark when you look at this bullpen, the biggest thing right now when you look at it?
Well, I have to say, Melancon.
Okay.
Your closer cannot be a question mark. Whatever team you are, whatever your hopes, are for the season, that's the position where, or the spot, the role where you cannot have question marks. You want to know what you're going to get when you bring in a guy. You want to see in the other team's eyes, other team's posture, oh no, when it's all over when the closer comes in. Kenley Jansen is that type of guy. I mean, for example, several others, just don't come to my mind right away, but, the oh-no closers. Mark Melancon at one point was an oh-no closer. Kind of slipped from that level last year, but he should be capable of reclaiming it again as long as he's okay physically.
Yeah, when you're spending that much money on a closer, you especially need him to come through and live up to that as well. They'll need that from Mark Melancon. All right, I mentioned the Rookie Career Development Program, Chris, and it's a program that Major League Baseball puts on every year. For people who don't know what it is, it's basically every one of the 30 clubs sends three or four prospects who are getting close to the big league level or have already made their big league debuts but haven't become regulars in the major leagues. And it covers for the players pretty much everything they could possibly want to know about things that go on in the major leagues, not between the lines on the field, whether it's how to be in the clubhouse, how to act with clubbies, how to be with the media, how to be on social media, all of that stuff. And every year the players come out of the event kind of praising it for what it's able to do. So Tyler Beattie was one of the guys that was down outside of Washington, D.C. for the event last weekend, and our guys got a chance to catch up with him. So let's listen to a little bit of that interview.
Tyler, let's start with this program, Rookie Career Program. What did it mean to you that the Giants wanted you to come, and what have you taken away from it so far?
Yeah, it meant a lot. I know how prestigious this is. I know how much you can learn from being here. The knowledge that they bring in on the panels, on discussions for these meetings, and it's great just to be a sponge to learn things and implement them into my career on and off the field. It's been awesome, and I've learned so much while I've been here.
Let's talk about your on-field 2017. You know, from a number standpoint, probably not exactly what you're hoping for, but what were your takeaways from the season in terms of positives and also what you learned from the struggles you had in the PCL?
Absolutely. It was an up-and-down year. Started great from spring training, kind of setting the tone, getting some experience pitching in Oakland in the Bay Series and getting my feet wet there and kind of going into Sacramento, hearing a lot about what the PCL was about, sort of learned it just by getting in and experiencing the ups and downs of playing in elevation and how my stuff sort of compared pitching in the PCL. And though I had some difficulty, some adversity, a tough month there, a bad stretch, but you know, a lot of learning experiences, learned a lot about my stuff, how to pitch in that environment and what I kind of needed to do to improve, to be better for 2018. And being able to pitch in the fall league after coming off the injury, getting healthy, and sort of building my confidence back, tweaking some things mechanically and in my routine allowed me to build more confidence. So going into 2018, I feel really good, real confident with what I'm doing.
Is it tough when you're that proverbial phone call away and know that if you put together a stretch and they need somebody that it could have happened at any point, to sort of stay within yourself and continue to work on those things and then dealing with the frustrations of struggling knowing how close you are?
Yeah, it's tough. I think the whole year I was sort of just anticipating the phone call. Maybe if I had a good start sitting there by the phone waiting for a phone call. And that sort of got in my head. I think I needed to have a new perspective of why I was playing, my routine, my mindset. And I think kind of the injury put me in that new state of mind where, you know, don't take for granted where you're at. I mean, you're a phone call away and it's frustrating that you got hurt on the verge of being called up. But it's an opportunity to get better, to take each start as it is, just to start to go out and improve. And though there was some things that I needed to work on, the club was sort of waiting for me to improve as the season went on. I think I needed time to reflect, and you know, with the injury and time to pitch in the fall league, it allowed me to kind of have that necessary time to improve on those things.
Does that sort of newfound mindset help you go into a spring training where you're kind of in that same boat where you know, you have a chance to maybe compete for a rotation spot in the big leagues, kind of putting behind you the ups and downs of 2017? And you know, do you try to use that perspective that you kind of discovered to stay even during the course of spring training this year?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll use it as momentum and confidence going into this spring training. I think from just what I was working on, able to kind of get my game in a position where I know I can compete and contribute at the big league level, I felt really confident coming out of 2016 after my year in AA, after the success that I had at my few times I pitched in spring training. I felt confident that I could contribute. Now throughout the year, confidence might have wavered a little bit, but I think I'm back in a position where I know that I can contribute to that team and I'm ready to do that next year.
One of the things you've had to deal with this offseason, really for the first time, is hear your name pop up in trade rumors. Yeah. How did you handle that side of baseball, which, you know, you don't really know what it's like until you see your name?
Right. I think I had a great distraction in that my wedding was going on within the week of the Stanton rumors. So I sort of had that to fall back on as my excuse, but at the same time, still looking on Twitter and seeing what people were saying. And I think able to communicate with Bobby, our GM, just in terms of what their vision was with me and the organization and their hopes of me contributing next year, allowed me to just have more peace with the process, what was going on, hearing my name, seeing it, and able to just be more comfortable with where I was at. Now, you know, it's unique. It's tough to see your name out there and think you could be in a different city with a different team within, you know, the click of a phone call. So I just tried to kind of lay back and enjoy the wedding festivities that were going on and let everything kind of handle itself off the field.
All right, a couple of fun questions for you. What's the craziest experience that you've had in baseball?
Craziest experience in baseball? Man. Winning the College World Series was pretty crazy. There was a fairly crazy thing that happened my first full year in the minors. We were in San Jose playing Inland Empire. Bases were loaded. I had just come out of the game. And a guy breaks his bat, hits a dribbler down the third base line. The ball goes under the bullpen benches. And one of the umpires is about to raise his hand to call a dead ball. Our left fielder, Jesus Galindo, goes over. And he kind of pauses for a second, and then he goes and grabs it and throws it, kind of lobs it into second base. Meanwhile, everybody's rounding the bases, and everybody kind of suspects that it's a ground rule double. Meanwhile, everybody's running, and it turns out to be an inside-the-park grand slam, and we lost. And it was just crazy, crazy to see something like that happen.
Not a positive memory, necessarily.
Not a positive memory, no.
What's your go-to uniform number? If you have your druthers, like the number that you pick.
It would be 11, but Carl Hubble has it, retired for the Giants. I think he played way back in the day, the 1900s, early 1900s. But I've worn, I wore 32 in big league camp last year, and Steven Okert took it when he went up, and he said, you're going to have to buy me a nice watch for this. No, I'll pass on 32. But I don't really have a favorite aside from number 11. That's what my dad wore when he was playing growing up.
Do you have a favorite Major League Baseball memory from when you were a kid watching a game, going to a game, something like that?
So I went to the first game of the World Series when the Red Sox played the Rockies in 04, and Beckett was pitching, struck out the first five guys. Garcia Parra, I think, started off the first inning with a double off the Green Monster. The atmosphere was electric. It was obviously seeing the Red Sox go on their way to win their first World Series since 1918 was incredible. The emotion from my dad being there with me and my brother was something I'll never forget.
Last one. Who's your celebrity lookalike?
Wow. I've gotten a lot of people told me I look like Jonathan Mayo, if you guys know who that is. I've gotten Channing Tatum as well, as they're both very similar looking. So both those guys have gotten comps. It's really mixed reviews at this point.
So, Chris, he talked a little bit about his up and down season in 2017. One thing he said that I thought was interesting was his mindset was off for part of the year, where he was basically waiting for the phone call, just pitching and waiting for the call to get his big league shot. And it kind of threw him off. And then the injury came and he had to deal with that. So he seems like he's much more confident heading into 2018. And obviously this is a guy who could be a huge part of this team's rotation in 2018 if everything goes right for him, right?
Yeah, Tim, it's funny. When I see him pitch in person, the times I have seen him pitch in person, I say to myself, my God, this guy's going to be good. You know, he's quite a prospect here. And then the season begins, and the numbers don't match what I saw in spring training, and I'm scratching my head. But I think here's a guy who, as you could tell from the audio, he does have an idea. He is mature, and I think things are coming full. The maturity is really catching up with the arm, or the arm is catching up with the maturity, however you want to put it. And, that's a good time. This may be the right time for him to break out.
And he's obviously one of the guys, when they talk about a trade and the Giants, most teams are asking about him. Obviously, now they've traded for Longoria. So he will likely stay put, and probably the best thing for a Giants system that needs to hang on to some prospects. All right, great stuff as always, Chris. Before we say goodbye, also want to give a shout-out. You have a nice article up for Willie McCovey celebrating his 80th birthday this week. So people want to check that out on the website as well. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Giants edition. For Chris Haft, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with Richard Justice, who's filling in again for AJ Cassavell on the podcast. Richard, thanks again for stepping in. We know how much you love the Padres.
I do love the Padres. I especially love what they are building there, Tim. And AJ Preller is one of the things he's done better, as well as anybody in baseball, is accumulate young talent. He did that in Texas, and he knows how to build a deep system. And in Andy Green, I think they got the right guy managing the Padres. The Padres are at the point where they're a lot closer to turning the corner than maybe people on the outside would think. But, you have to go do it on the field, so we'll see.
We're going to get into the team's lineup, rotation, bullpen as currently constructed. If no more moves are made, this is what they would roll out there on opening day. We'll get your thoughts on that, Richard. But first, you speak of bringing in young talent and building up the depth of that minor league system. A.J. Preller and company at it again this week as they trade away Yonhervis Salarte to the Blue Jays. They get a couple of young minor leaguers back. Edward Olivares, the number 24 now ranked player in the Padres system. They also get Jared Kharkov back in that play, in that trade. Those aren't two guys that jump out as top prospects that are going to suddenly leap into the majors and help you out, but it is more depth, and they're players that have upside. And Salarte was a guy who there's so many infielders right now on this roster that they had to deal somebody. Seems like a trade that really made a lot of sense for both teams.
It is, and I think the way AJ Preller looked at it is, we're adjusting our depth, and we, as you said, we have a surplus of guys in the infield. I mean, they feel like this young guy, Carlos Aswaji, is ready to play second base, that he can play second base or at least compete for the position. And the key guy in the trade is 21-year-old outfielder Edward Olivares. He's a guy that AJ has had some conversations about prior. They think he's going to play, you know, 2 years. I mean, that maybe get to double A next year and then be on the cusp in 2019. But I think the way he looked at it is he was able to strengthen one part of the team and take away from a part of the team that he already had pretty good depth at.
Yeah, it's a move that made sense. All right, let's get into the lineup rotation and bullpen. Obviously, you continue to hear rumors about the fact that this team could add Eric Hosmer at some point this offseason, but that doesn't count for this assignment. We're going with the current roster. So,
yeah.
Manuel Margot leading things off. Freddie Galvis batting second. Will Myers batting third. Hunter Renfro batting fourth. Corey Spangenberger batting fifth at third. Then it's Carlos Asuaje at second. Jose Perella in left, and Austin Hedges, your catcher, batting ninth. This is a lineup that hit a lot of home runs in 2017, but they didn't necessarily get on base, and it seems like as constructed in this list, that could be a similar issue going forward.
Yeah, and I think we're just watching the growth of young players. You know, I mean, Will Myers is the only guy that you look at and you know what he's going to get. Freddie Galvis from the Phillies to play shortstop. That's a big addition for them. But I think, you know, it's take a deep breath and it's be patient. It's give Manuel Margot, give him at bats, give Renfro at bats, give the young second baseman at bats, you know, Austin Hedges. We're going to find out about all those guys, and that's part of what you do. You try to, by the end of last season, I think there was some clarity that all those guys could contribute going down the road, and I think that's what you're looking for as you continue to go. Now, if you bring in Eric Hosmer, you know, If you get him on a 5 or 6 year deal, that and he's just 28 years old. It's unusual players like that become free agents at that age. That makes sense long term, and it is. You still have to think long term. I know I've talked to a couple of general managers lately who've been parts of reconstructions, and they said we're willing to do anything in terms of a free agent, but we can't lose sight of the big picture. And for the Padres, the big picture is, let's just continue to let those young guys fail and succeed and fail and grow. That's the atmosphere that Andy Green has created. The thing about that is you don't know how quickly they're going to turn the corner. And so we'll find out.
All right. So what is the biggest question mark, you think, Richard, when you look at that group?
Well, the biggest question mark is on base percentage. You know, yeah. Like young guys tend to swing and miss a lot. We've seen that with them. You know, we're in an era where we're focused on getting the ball in the air and getting the ball over the fence, and that's fine. And you can live with strikeouts, but you can only live with a certain, you know, you can't live with a million strikeouts. So I think the question mark is, who is Manuel Margot? I mean, he looked better. You know, he looked like a guy that's going to be a player. I think they still believe Hunter Renfro is going to be a player, you know, and Hedges. I mean, to me, those are the three guys. And just if you could tell me where those guys are going to be in September in their careers, I think I could tell you what the timetable for the Padres contending again in the National League West is.
All right, let's move on to the rotation, and it's a rotation that is young but lots of question marks. Clayton Richard will start things off, the lefty, then Luis Perdomo, Denelson Lamet, Colin Ray, and Robbie Erlin. The thing about this Padres team is there's a lot of young pitching coming up through the system that is not yet ready for the big league. So it's almost a little bit of a patchwork rotation at this point, isn't it?
It is a patchwork rotation. And, you know, they've added Tyson Ross. They're going to bring Tyson Ross back, Chris Young, Matt Strom, three guys that have at different points in their careers. Well, Tyson Ross, obviously, is very familiar to Padres fans, so is Chris Young. I think those guys bring an experience factor, but I think they also will push the young guys. You're going to have 10, and I forgot to include Brian Mitchell, who was acquired from the Yankees. So you're going to have 10 people competing for 5 spots. Well, you need 10 starters anyway. So I think that helps everybody, and especially a guy like Ross and a guy like Chris Young. You want what they bring in terms of giving young players a role model and all of that. But the real interesting work is at AA, where their top four of their top prospects, including Cal Quantrill and Eric Lauer, Joey Lucchese, Jacob Nix, their development and they probably will all start the season at AA. I think they probably will all be invited to spring training just so the major league staff can get a look at them. But the timetable for the Padres is essentially their timetable. And so you would expect those guys to all be in AAA by the end of the year, possibly the big leagues, depending on what the injury is and how the young guys like Perdomo, how they do during the year. But I would say from that point of view, if I'm a Padres fan, I want to come to spring training. I want to see those guys pitch, and I'm going to be excited about that. I'm going to be excited that there are so many young arms with big upsides wrapped around the Chris Youngs and the Clayton Richards and all of those guys. The thing I learned in 2012 watching the Oakland A's just go out and collect young pitching, and I'll never forget on the diamond, Billy Bean says, we've got the best pitching staff in the American League here, but it may not be until next year or the year after. Well, the A's went to the playoffs that year, and the young pitchers came of age very quickly, and that can happen. And that's, pitching translates at any level. So that's the optimism you would have going forward.
Yeah, once you see those prospects at spring training, I think that's when the fans really start to get excited about a rebuild, because we can see these guys. They're not just names on a prospect list. They're real people, and they're really pitching, and we get a chance to see them in big league-type games. So definitely a spring training to look forward to here coming up in about a month here in 2018. All right, finally, the bullpen, Richard. Brad Hand is back for now. We'll see if that changes, but we're doing
for now.
Kirby Yates behind him. Craig Stammen's back. Kazuhisa Makita, Colton Brewer, Phil Maton, Carter Capps is back if healthy, Jose Torres. So you have a couple of obviously very strong arms. The question mark will be whether or not those guys stay in the or if they get traded at some point. But overall, it looks like a bullpen that has some potential.
It does, and I guess I'm surprised that Brad Hand is still there. I know contending teams that want him and wanted him at the trade deadline last year. Obviously, A.J. Preller didn't get a price he was comfortable paying. I still think, if you're going to tell me Brad Hand is pitching for the Houston Astros on opening day, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. They're one of the teams that have been most intense about their pursuit of him. And then you just let the arms fall in. Carter Capps, I assume, will be healthy at some point in the first half if he's not already having undergone thoracic outlet surgery. And then you just line up those other guys, Torres and Yates, and there's so many balls in the air with the Padres, in terms of what figuring out the outfield, which of these young players are long-term solutions, and which of the starters are going to make it both near-term and long-term. The future is bright in that way, and I think in that way the bullpen is the last thing you sort of sort out. You put as many arms out there as you can and let them fight it out. And in that way, Brad Hand is really not a fit there, and Carter Capps is sort of a fit. You could see that they pitch the eighth and ninth inning and provide some certainty for those when you have a lead late in games. But I just I think we can't say it enough. Padres are in a good spot. They have a lot of talent. I think in our top 100, I think they had 7 of the top 100, and that was tied for the most in the majors. When you have, history has shown, we've seen it with the Royals, that when you have this kind of talent at the minor league level, it's going to translate into wins at some point. And the trend now in baseball is to push the young kids, to challenge them, to put them a year ahead of their schedule and see if they can survive and see how they adjust. So that's my Padres optimism.
I love it. I love the optimism, and there are reasons to be optimistic, if not for 2018. Certainly for the end of the season, maybe, where you see a lot more of these prospects coming up and into 2019 as we build towards the future for the Padres. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Padres edition. For Richard Justice, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Drew Goodman, play-by-play man for the Colorado Rockies, stepping in for Thomas Harding this week on the podcast. Drew, love your work on the TV side for the Rockies. Thanks for joining us.
You bet, Tim. Anytime.
All right, on the podcast, we're going to talk about Ryan McMahon a little bit. We're going to hear from him as well. He was down at the Rookie Career Development Program last weekend. We're going to get into the lineup, rotation, and bullpen for this Rockies team if the season started today in mid-January. No more moves for this team and how it'll stack up. But before we get to that stuff, Drew, Charlie Blackmon has avoided arbitration, his final year of arbitration, and he has gotten a pretty good raise. He goes from $7.3 million to $14 million. That's a huge leap as far as arbitration years. Based on his season in 2017, you'd have to say that he deserves it. Now, I know some Rockies fans were kind of holding out hope that maybe a long-term deal was in the cards. Now it looks pretty much set that he will make it to free agency in a year. But just talk about this move by the Rockies. I feel like it's always good to avoid arbitration when you can.
Yeah, and the Rockies have a strong history of avoiding arbitration with their players, and you figured they would settle on a number, and I know the projections had it in the 13-4 range, Charlie did a little bit better than that, and good for the Rockies for saying, hey, we realize, you know, how valuable he is, and we don't want to make it contentious, going completely to arbitration. So they arrived at that figure, and listen, he was, to me, one of the, you know, two or three best players in the league last year. I know he finished fifth in the MVP voting. I thought he got slighted there. Maybe he and Nolan, you know, split a lot of votes from that perspective. The Coors Field thing always works against Rockies players unfairly, in my opinion. He's a tremendous player. He's got an unbelievable work ethic. And, on a personal level, I'm happy for him. Good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you think about the possibility of trying to sign him up, even if he reaches free agency, trying to keep him in Colorado, going to arbitration and the negativity that can come from that would have definitely, have hampered that effort as well in a year from now.
Yeah, and Tim, as you well know, just because they've now arrived and settled at a figure, it doesn't preclude the organization and his representation from getting together and you know, maybe extending him out and doing something long-term. I can tell you this about Charlie. Not that money isn't, you know, important to individuals. This is a cat that still drives a 2004 Jeep Cherokee with, 200,000 miles on it or something. He's not about getting the last dollar. He loves playing in Colorado. He loves his teammates. He is an avid fisherman, and naturally, you know, when he can have a day off and run up to the mountains and go fly fishing, is that the be-all, end-all at the end of the process to determine whether you stay or you go? Probably not, but I think there's a lot of things that work in the favor of, you know, having the conversations, whether it continues through spring training or at some point this year, to get an extension done. So I wouldn't dismiss it completely out of hand.
And obviously that's going to be a big story throughout the next year for the Rockies, and then obviously Nolan Arenado looming a year after that, as well as this team that's back into contention, tries to keep this thing together and keep this team rolling. All right, let's take a look at this team as it is constituted right now. And when you look at the lineup, this is the lineup, rotation, and bullpen that our writer Thomas Harding has put together as of right now. And he has, when you look at the lineup, obviously Charlie Blackmon leading things off, maybe the best leadoff guy in the game. Then DJ LeMahieu batting second at second. Ian Desmond in the three hole. Then Nolan Arenado batting cleanup. Gerardo Parra in right. Trevor Story, the shortstop. Ryan McMahon at first. And Chris Iannetta catching. Now, obviously, the Rockies, I think, would like to get more things done. But when you look at that lineup as a whole, it's still a lineup that would be pretty productive, I think. Right, Drew?
I think it could be a formidable lineup. I think that they would still like to potentially enhance that. When you look at that lineup, you say, okay, Blackmon, 37 home runs, 104 driven in last year, ridiculously high. OPS, we know who Nolan is. We know who DJ LeMahieu is, helping set the table. Ian Desmond, you got to hope has a bounce back year. For the first time in his career, he dealt with injuries. He would be a candidate, keeping your fingers crossed, to have a bounce back year. Gerardo Parra, was not good in his first year with the Rockies. Last year, he was terrific. But what you're still missing there is the bona fide, like Cargo when he was hitting, 40 home runs a year, where you just feel going in, man, there's no question that guy's a 30 home run, you know, 100 ribby kind of guy behind Nolan. Mark Reynolds remains unsigned. That's why I don't know if this is going to be the lineup that opens up on March 29th. I may be wrong on this, but something tells me they're going to work hard to still get something else done via, you know, a free agent or even potentially a trade. But as it's currently constituted, as Thomas put together, is that a good lineup? Yeah, it should be a good lineup. Is it a great lineup? That so many unforeseen things have to take place. I mean, does Ryan McMahon become, Cody Bellinger? He's got a lot of ability. He's put up big numbers in the minor leagues. Those are the things you don't know.
The nice thing about this lineup and the possibility of an addition is with McMahon, the young first baseman, they could add someone in the outfield or first base. They're not limited in being put in a spot where, okay, we have to find a right fielder or a left fielder or a first baseman. There are movable parts in the lineup with the players that they have that allows them to kind of broaden that search for that bat that you mentioned, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, and that's a great observation. And under Jeff Breidich, he really wants to have athletes, versatile players that they can play multiple positions. It's a trend that, you know, I don't know if it was first started by Ben Zobrist, but it, you know, got a lot of national attention in their run a couple of years ago. A guy that you can play with confidence defensively at more than one spot and still gives you a plus bat. And so, Ian Desmond certainly is one of those guys, and there's some guys out on the market still that have the ability to be multiple position type players.
All right, let's move on to the rotation, and the way Thomas has it set up is John Gray is the number one, then Tyler Anderson, Herman Marquez, Chad Bettis, and Kyle Freeland. Now, the neat thing I think about the Rockies situation, most of those guys at this point are obviously either pre-arbitration or in arbitration. It is a very affordable rotation, but what I didn't mention is all the other arms, all the other young arms that don't make that top five that, based on a great spring training, could find their way into it. You look just at last year at guys that were solid, like Senzatella and other guys. It's an impressive young core for this Rockies team, and when you think about a rotation, it's not just these five, right? I mean, they go 6-7, and you need that these days.
Yeah, absolutely do, because as I like to say, there's one of the guarantees in life, right, is death, taxes, and pitchers get hurt. So one of the great reasons that the Rockies have a very nice window to continue to contend. They went to the postseason last year. Obviously, you want to, go a couple steps beyond where they ended up last season, losing the wild card game. But it centers around a young, controllable rotation. And it's not just, well, they're young and they're controllable and they're big league pitchers. They have some guys in that rotation that really have a chance, if they emerge, to be top flight, top of the rotation type of arms. And that's not just John Gray, who's probably the most celebrated of that young group. Herman Marquez has the ability, again, if things fall right. We've seen, many instances where he took the ball last year and he pitched like a number one. He's got that kind of upside. Tyler Anderson, who's battled some injuries throughout his career, is a really interesting guy. He's hard to hit. He's a great competitor. And again, great upside. He's already produced some when he's been healthy. And that doesn't include the conversations about Kyle Freeland. Chad Bettis should be, a year removed from the testicular cancer surgery. He should be that much better. And you mentioned Senzatella. How about Jeff Hoffman, who came in the Tulowitzki deal? Big arm, big curveball. He has a chance to make some strides. So that is the strength of the team going forward. And as we know, this sport is ultimately about pitching, and the Rockies are in a good place there with high-end type of arms that are really, really affordable, as you suggested.
Yeah, it's going to make spring training a lot of fun, I think, for the Rockies, too, seeing all these guys go out there and battle for spots. So having an inexpensive rotation allowed the Rockies to go out and spend a lot of money on the bullpen this offseason. And that seems at this point to be the most finished off aspect of this team. The way that Thomas has it lined up is Wade Davis as your closer, then Brian Shaw and Jake McGee behind him, Adam Ottavino, Mike Dunn, Carlos Estevez, Scott Oberg, and Chris Rusin in there as well. It's obviously a bullpen that they went out and they decided this offseason they needed to take care of with Greg Holland leaving. They kept McGee. They bring in Shaw and Davis, and this looks like it's going to be one of the better bullpens in the NL. Now, I know bullpens are unpredictable, but on paper, this looks pretty good.
Yeah, on paper, it looks terrific. You'd probably be hard-pressed to find many better bullpens in baseball. Been a trend for a while. If you look at the successful teams, the teams that play deep in October, they all have the ability to make a game a six-inning affair. And if you can have the lead after six innings, and then you have to go face, you got a couple lefties coming up in this, and in Jake McGee's case, he gets righties out also. Jake McGee, and then in the eighth, you have Brian Shaw, and in the ninth, you have Wade Davis. I mean, it's tough. I mean, that would present a lot of problems for the offense of an opponent on a given night. Also, there's a couple of arms in there that are not necessarily well-known from a fan's perspective, but from an industry perspective, they have a chance to really make big jumps, and that's Scott Oberg, who has closer stuff. He's given up some home runs in his past, but he really started to make some strides late in the season last year, and Carlos Estevez as well. Two big, big arms, guys who can touch 100 miles an hour. And in the case of Oberg, he has a good secondary stuff. Estevez slider still kind of in development, but those guys shouldn't be forgotten. And the last guy I'll mention, Tim, is Adam Ottavino, who's been a closer before, had a really tough year last year. He lost his arm slot and really battle command issues. But if he can return close to the form he had, even after Tommy John surgery, where the command is back, that's another guy that is really tough, especially on righties.
All right, to finish things off here on the podcast, I did want to talk about Ryan McMahon a little bit more. He was at the Rookie Career Development Program last weekend. For those who don't know what that is, it's basically a weekend where every major league team sends three or four of their prospects who are either getting close to the big leagues or have just kind of broken through into the big leagues like McMahon did in 2017. And they cover everything to do with being a big league ball player that has nothing to do with actually playing the game of baseball. It's everything off the field. It's doing your best on social media, staying safe on social media, dealing with the actual media, dealing with the clubhouse and veterans and all of that stuff. It's a program that players praise every year. McMahon was down there, and our guys, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, got a chance to catch up with McMahon and talk to him a little bit. Let's hear from Ryan.
Ryan, I think I remember talking to you after your ridiculous double-A on the road season and all the ups and downs, and then you come back and have a normal season and things really started to click for you. Aside from the ridiculousness of that season all on the road, what really clicked for you in 2017 that let you kind of perform probably the way that you were expecting yourself to perform?
Personally had definitely a better year this past year. Got in with some good coaches, kind of was open to more ideas. I was a little bit hard-headed the year before, kind of just wanted to stick with what I knew. But this last year kind of opened up my ears a little bit, took in what coaches were telling me a little bit better, and I just stuck with it after that. So it was a fun year.
Do you look back at that all road year and as hard as it was, you're like, all right, I really learned a lot about what I need to do to be ready to play regardless of outside distractions or difficult situations?
Yeah, during that time, all the coaches were like, hey, you'll be thankful for this later. And, when I was going through it, I was like, man, no, I'm not. This stinks. I'm not going to be thankful for this ever. But, after having this last year and just, kind of falling back on things I learned throughout that tough year, traveling all over and stuff like that, it definitely has made me a tougher person and kind of let me handle things a little bit better.
You got that first taste of the big league life.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that experience. Now that especially you've had a little distance from it and a little perspective of, you know, about what that was like and how that will work as a motivator for you to get there full time.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything you dream about as a kid and some more. You know, I call it the white glove treatment. You know, if you don't want to lift a finger or anything like that, people come and do things for you. It's just it's so like, as a kid, what you think it's going to be. I mean, being in that big stadium, taking ground balls out there, feeling like there's walls all around the place just because it's a huge stadium. It's everything you dream about. So I really enjoyed my time up there.
Now, one of the things that helped you get there was showing, you know, a little more positional flexibility, and you had to do some of that almost on the fly.
Yeah.
What has that been like from a guy who was, I'm a third baseman. Okay, maybe I'm a third baseman, first baseman, and then we'll sprinkle in some second base too. I mean, what has that flexibility done for you?
You know, it was actually really fun learning second base and, you know, kind of playing all over the place. I feel like I was playing a new position every day. But I had a lot of great coaches who helped me along the way, kind of learn on the fly. It's kind of cool. I kind of like it. I like being able to be the guy who can play all those positions. So I really enjoyed it, honestly.
Ready to go behind the plate?
You know, I caught in Little League, actually, but hopefully not anytime soon.
All right, a couple fun questions for you. What's your go-to uniform number? Like, if you can pick what uniform number you have, what's your favorite number? And why?
Let's see. I wore 15 in high school. I got a pro ball. Raymond Tapia wears 15, so I switched to 5. So usually just something with a 5 and then. But I'm 24 right now in the big league, so kind of like that number, too. I mean, that's a good number. Griffey wore it. Miguel Cabrera. Some good guys at 24, so I might stick with that one.
Willie Mays, you may want to throw that one
in
here. Yeah, remember him.
Need to
show a little history.
Expand who I know.
There you go. There
you go. 24.
What's the, you know, the craziest experience that you've had in your pro baseball career?
Probably just the cliche answer, the whole year on the road. You know, just there's a lot of things that happen in the minor leagues that you kind of just sum up as the minor league experience. So, definitely that year on the road. Just the different things we did, you know, like to get all the games in before leaving for the next place. So, yeah, that year was crazy.
What's your favorite Major League Baseball moment from childhood? Like, you know, going to a game, watching a game, something that really stood out to you?
When I was a kid, my dad and I flew down. So we were living up in San Jose, California, and Bobby Gritch had actually gotten my dad and I tickets to the Angels Twins. Gosh, I don't remember exactly what year, but I was a little kid. And it was a playoff baseball game. And I got this little bat from it. And as a kid, that was all I ever wanted, were like the little bats at every game. So that's my best memory, because my dad and I flew down there literally just for the game, flew home after the game, like a red-eye back up there or whatever. I can remember it vividly, so it's awesome.
So there's Ryan McMahon talking about that big league debut. He had a good season in 2017 after struggling a little bit before that. And you look at 2018 for this young, talented first baseman. You mentioned the name Bellinger when we were talking about him during the lineup. Obviously, I don't think we should set that as the bar, but this is a guy who is a well-respected, highly touted prospect who could be a huge factor for this team in the upcoming season, right?
There's no question. I mean, you know, you go back half a dozen years and Nolan Arenado was a nice prospect. Did people know that he was going to become the guy that we're aware of today? No, that's the beautiful thing about the game. Even though Bellinger was on everybody's radar, certainly going into last year, could anybody have guessed he would have put the kind of season together that he did at the big league level? Probably not. So that's the beautiful thing about baseball. We always talk at this time of year about known commodities, right? But who is the next group that a year from now, 2 years from now, we're going to go, man, that what a great, you know, young talent that is, and look at the numbers that guy put up. From an ability standpoint, does Ryan McMahon have the talent to be an impactful player on the offensive side in particular? Absolutely. And he's a really good athlete. He fits earlier. We were talking about Jeff Breidich's feeling that you got to have positional versatility, and he's played third, he's played first, he's played some second last year in Double A and Triple A to give him positional versatility. So we know he's athletic enough to go different spots. And now, how quickly will the bat come at the big league level? I think he only had 19 at bats at the big league level last year, but you know, after a tough 2016, you know, he certainly demonstrated again that he is a guy that has the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and hopefully that translates at the big league level where he can be impactful, and he's probably going to get a shot this year to show what he can do with a multitude of at-bats.
Drew, thank you so much for stepping in for Thomas this week. It's an exciting time to be involved with this Rockies team. Enjoy 2018.
Yeah, it should be a blast. Looking forward to it. Tim, thanks.
This has been MLB.com Extras, our Rockies edition. For Drew Goodman, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with Ken Gernick, our MLB.com Dodgers reporter. A lot to get to on the podcast this week. We're going to talk about the Dodgers lineup and rotations. If the season started right now, no more moves, if they had to drop their pencils and get going into opening day, we'll talk about that. The Rookie Career Development Program was last weekend, and Will Smith was down there, the Dodgers prospect. We'll hear from him, talk about him a little bit. But first, Ken, let's start with the trade the Dodgers have made over the last week. They get Scott Alexander in a three-team deal with the Royals and the White Sox. They also get infielder Jake Peter, but it seems like Alexander was the bigger piece. They trade away a prospect in Trevor Oaks, also Luis Avila. But talk about what Scott Alexander could bring to this team. Obviously, he's a reliever, and he throws from the left side.
He also only has one full major league season, and so I think the fact that he's controllable entered into this, whereas Avila is a five-year veteran. Of course, Avila has been successful. He was hurt a little bit last year, and there probably was some concern, not only because he could be a free agent after a year, but the fact that he has some injury history. So Alexander is a sinker ball pitcher, ground ball pitcher, young, coming off his best season in a brief career. And I just think that he's one of many pitchers in a deep bullpen. They're not necessarily looking for him to step in and be the eighth inning pitcher. I think they'll probably use more of a committee, as they really have done in past years until somebody steps up. Last year, it was Brandon Morrow. But I don't see this as a one-for-one Scott Alexander moving in to replace Brandon Morrow type of trade. This is just a young, talented left-hander who the Dodgers were able to acquire. They're always looking for relievers, who isn't? But Andrew Friedman has always said that the bullpen is what keeps him awake at night because of the volatility inherent in relief pitchers. So here they have a young, talented left-handed reliever, and I think he just, slides into the mix.
All right, let's get into the lineup and rotation. And I know the story on Dodgers.com about the lineup, Ken, I don't think you wrote, but we'll go through what is listed out there as the possible lineup. If the season started today, Chris Taylor leading things off in center, Corey Seager batting second at short, Justin Turner at third, then Cody Bellinger in the cleanup spot, Yasiel Puig out in right, Jock Peterson in left, Logan Forsyth at second, and Austin Barnes doing the catching. You may have a little differing opinion on that, but overall, when you look at this lineup, it's obviously extremely similar to the lineup that we saw at the end of 2017 and in the postseason. What are the strengths to this lineup?
Well, I think they showed last year, they don't rely on any one player. And as long as Bellinger doesn't have a sophomore jinx type season, it's a long lineup, and they can get production really from the top to the bottom. With Seager up there and Justin Turner, who has really become a quality, dependable run producer. Puig bounced back from a couple tough years, and he was very productive. Taylor brings some speed up on top and some power. Jock Peterson showed in the postseason some of what he showed as a rookie. And so they're going to be looking for consistency. They've got Andrew Toles coming off an injury year who could also step in there in some left field play. And you got Kike Hernandez from the right-hand side. The one player we haven't mentioned yet is Matt Kemp, who, once was a Dodgers star, and he's really been bouncing around lately. He doesn't figure to be with the club. He figures to either be traded or released. They don't want to bring him back. This was a money dump or a money exchange, basically, in the trade that they made with Atlanta. But technically, he's on the 40-man roster right now. So if the season were to start today, he's there.
Everybody in that lineup is pretty proven, at least through 2017. So is there a question mark at all when you look at this? Is there something that the Dodgers maybe are a little concerned about heading into 2018?
Well, I don't know if it's really a concern. I think that, you know, with Barnes, and also we didn't mention Yasmani Grandal, who was an all-star a few years ago. So you've got some flexibility behind the plate. You know, Forsyth did not have the kind of season they wanted and expected of him after the trade. If his bat doesn't come alive, there could be some juggling. Barnes could go to second base. Taylor could come into the infield. So there are some fallback positions. The way you've laid it out is the way they hope it would go if it were to start today. But again, they also have some flexibility if, you know, if Forsythe's bat doesn't come alive. I think that's really maybe the one question mark is, are they going to get enough offense out of second base, out of Logan Forsythe, and what they will do against right-handed pitching, whether they bring back Chase Utley or they use maybe Austin Barnes, who's pretty good against right-handed pitching, even though he bats right-handed. But, you know, you're talking about really tinkering around the fringes here. They didn't get to the World Series in the seventh game of the World Series because they had a whole lot of holes. So you're dealing with a very, very solid lineup.
Yeah, not a lot of holes in the rotation as well. Obviously, Yu Darvish is gone off the World Series team, but for most of 2017, he wasn't a part of this rotation. Here's how it's laid out right now. Clayton Kershaw, obviously the ace. Then Rich Hill, Alex Wood, Kenta Maeda, Hyunjin Ryu. That's five, but obviously it goes deeper than that. Walker Buehler made his big league debut in 2017. He could factor in. Julio Urias eventually is going to be healthy, and you wonder if he could find a spot in that rotation as well. It's a talented rotation. I guess the question, Ken, is, as always with all these pitchers that the Dodgers have, can they all stay healthy?
Absolutely, but it's also a question mark with any team. But this team, all five of those that you mentioned were on the disabled list last year. So although they all had 20 starts or more, they do have a history of injuries, especially at the top with Clayton Kershaw and back injuries 2 years in a row. But also, let's mention that until Yu Darvish actually signs somewhere else, I wouldn't rule him out coming back. It's not a certainty for sure, but until he's gone, he's not completely gone. And the Dodgers have expressed interest in bringing him back. So, you know, they by bringing back a Yu Darvish and moving everybody else down a notch after Kershaw, you've got the kind of depth that the Dodgers have always tried to accumulate, which would allow them, with their manipulation of the 10-day disabled list rule, they basically have a six-man rotation, and they just slide guys in and out to give starters extra rest so that they don't break down.
As far as the injuries go, and Rich Hill obviously is the one of the guys that has the issue with the blisters. Is that something that you think is going to always be a thing with him?
Well, you know, it really wasn't after, say, May. You know, it kind of carried over from the previous year and bothered him. But he was able to overcome it. I think that's probably less of a concern than, say, maybe Alex Wood, who had this sternum inflammation several times during the year. You know, there's some question mark about Maeda's elbow, although it hasn't bothered him since he signed. And you've got Ryu coming off his first healthy season, more or less, after missing 2 years with shoulder and elbow injuries. So, you know, you've got really there are all different types of injuries throughout that rotation. But I think Hill, basically, at the end of the season, was as healthy as any of them.
Obviously, it's a group that, if healthy, they will be impressive on the mound. And you said it, they could still add more as well before opening day actually comes along. All right, I mentioned the Rookie Career Development Program, and it's an annual event put on by Major League Baseball. Every team sends three or four prospects that are getting closer to the big leagues. They get a chance to kind of get lessons on how to deal with the media, how to deal with a big league clubhouse, things that you wouldn't even necessarily think to ask about, they get taught about beforehand. So it's a neat thing. It always goes well. The players always seem to have a good time at it, and it was last weekend down in Washington, D.C. One of the players that the Dodgers sent was Will Smith, catching prospect. He is one of a few catching prospects within the Dodgers system, within the top 10 right now. Let's listen to a little bit of what he had to say about the event.
Will, you're here at the Rookie Career Development Program. How much did you know about the program before you got invited to come out here, and how much do you think it's going to help when you get to the big leagues, having gone through this?
I honestly had never heard of it, not even in a locker room talk from other guys, but it's a really cool experience so far. Last night was really cool, touring the Capitol, and then today, listening to a few speakers, just gaining knowledge about the transition to the big leagues, going from the minor leagues, is invaluable to how important it is.
You've moved pretty quickly in pro ball, even despite breaking your hand. You got to Double A. You played in the Arizona Fall League. Mm-hmm. How much would you say you learned in your first full season of professional baseball, and what did it teach you that you're going to have to, you know, what adjustments you're going to make it up to the big leagues?
Right. I mean, I definitely learned how long a season it is. You get a little taste of it the summer after you're drafted, but that first full year going through spring training, then the rest of the year. I mean, it's long. So I think that better prepared me for next year, knowing the length of the season, just learning not to get too high and too low, and when you're doing well, when you're not doing well, just kind of staying even keeled throughout the whole year.
You played at Louisville with Brendan McKay, and there's a lot of interest in guys, two-way players, Shohei Ohtani, and you know, Brendan obviously was about as good two-way player as there's been in college baseball in a long time. Mm-hmm. You not only played with him, you caught him as his catcher. What do you think his future is brighter as a hitter or as a pitcher?
I honestly don't know. All I know is he's a great teammate, great guy, and he's a very good baseball player. I hope the best for him, thinking long career playing both, but I really can't say how well he's going to do.
Okay. And then we have a series of just kind of fun questions we ask all the players. What uniform number do you wear, and why'd you pick that number?
In college, I wore 30. Don't really know why, but that was just kind of a number I always got assigned to in Little League or whatever team it was, so I guess it turned into my lucky number. But other than that, I don't really have a favorite number or anything.
Okay. How about, is there a celebrity anybody says you look like? Do you have a celebrity look like out there?
Not that I know of. Got the same name.
That's
Will
true.
Smith.
You guys look a little different.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Okay. How about the craziest baseball experience that you've had?
Craziest bit, probably my last game in college. It was an unfortunate ending, but it was crazy.
Yeah, because what was it? I remember watching the game. You guys had one of the best closers in the country, maybe the best closer in the country on the mm-hmm. mound. And was it a freshman who came in and pinch hit? Was it a grand slam?
I think so, yeah.
So that was a tough one. How about your favorite Major League Baseball memory from when you were a kid?
I think my favorite was actually I grew up a Red Sox fan. I had family in the area, even though I'm not from there. But seeing the 04 team win the World Series, I can remember talking to my grandpa in the ALCS when they're down 3-0 against the Yankees, and they came back, and he was like, there's a 0% chance they come back and win. I was like, oh, you'll just wait and see. And I think that really taught me to just keep playing the game every day. It kind of translated to now, where it's just win that day and win that game.
And following up on that, have you had a chance to talk to Dave Roberts about 2004 at all?
No, I haven't had that conversation yet, but talked to him a couple times, and I look forward to that conversation.
All right, Ken. So, Smith, some good things to say about the program and also what he learned during 2017. It's what it's all about for these prospects, is year-to-year progressing. He's a prospect in the system. Kibert Ruiz is also one in the system, both of them catchers. Smith seems like he's a guy that's getting closer to knocking on the door for the majors, though, isn't he?
Right. And what you have here is a guy who was a first-round pick. He's very athletic. He can run. He's a lot like Austin Barnes. He can play other positions in the infield. He missed part of the season with a broken hand. So when you look at his stats from the season from Rancho Cucamonga, nothing really exciting. But what might not show up is that to catch up on the time he missed, they sent him to the Arizona Fall League, and he really went off. He hit for power. He hit for average against the highest competition that he's ever faced. So the Dodgers are real excited about what they saw from him in the Arizona Fall League, and I think that's why they sent him to the development camp here, because they really saw some improvement, and they see that he's a lot closer than maybe a lot of people thought. So they're excited about Will Smith. You know, they do have other prospects in the organization, but they didn't spend a first-round pick on him, not expecting him to be arriving quickly. So he'll probably start out at Double-A this year, and it's a pretty quick jump for a lot of players on the fast track from Double-A to the big league. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him, in September even.
Yeah, oftentimes when you're in Double A, it's really just an injury away at that point. So we will see on Will Smith. All right, this has been MLB.com Extras, our Dodgers edition. For Ken Gernick, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.